If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at liveonfourlegspodcast@gmail.com or get involved in the conversation on social media. Join the Pearl Jam Podcast Community Group on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @liveonfourlegspod.
Good evening, Nazis. It's nice to be here. It's nice to have you here. What do you do here? Do you sleep? Do you eat? Do you fuck? You're just like everyone else, right? And away we go.
You're listening to Live on Four Legs, the live Pearl Jam podcast experience, featuring
Mr. Stone Gossard. Fucking Cameron in a jump. Mr. Boom Gasper! You can call me Al, you can call me Ed, you just fucking call me, why don't you?
Hey everybody, now welcome to Live on Four Legs, a definitive live Pearl Jam podcast. And in about a week's time, maybe a little less for some of us, we'll get into that in a second, but in about a week's time, we are finally here for Dark Matter. It has snuck up on us pretty quickly, to be honest with you. For a lot of this time, like kind of in the middle between the two singles coming out, we were like, what's going on? We haven't heard anything. And then once Running came out, it's like the weeks just kind of passed by really quickly. And now here we are about to get a brand new Pearl Jam record. And honestly, next week, before you get the vinyl on Record Store Day or before you go and listen to it on Spotify or however you're going to intake this, you can go to a record store. You can go to the movies. And you will be able to hear the album a couple of times. So it's an exciting time. And honestly, on top of all that, there's a tour very, 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 very soon. So there's a lot to look forward to. And I think it's going to just fall right on top of our plates in an instant here. And I think we're all going to have a really good year of Pearl Jam when all is said and done. But before getting into all that, this is another anniversary show for the 30th anniversary of the 1994 tour. And we are going to go to Rochester, New York, because Rochester, New York was in 100% totality for that eclipse. And I did not plan that. Honestly, it just kind of fit in with the line of 1994 shows that we're doing, but it seems kind of fun to say on air, so I'm going to say it there. But Rochester, New York, it's kind of in the middle of these shows where this, honestly, is the date right before we found out about Kurt Cobain's death. So it's a good stretch. It's a very positive stretch for the band when some of 1994 wasn't, and it'll be fun to get into. So let's start that. Randy Sobel over here, John Farrar over there.
Hello, hello.
Let's talk about Dark Matter. We're getting very close. We've read all of the articles. We've gotten all of the takes that we possibly could of this. And yet we've only heard two and a third songs. I'm going to give something special a little bit of a third there. Mm-hmm. I'm at the point where I don't even remember all of the song titles. If you asked me right now what all of them were, I probably would miss two or three.
Yeah, I don't know that, but I can name all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all going to change very, very soon. Record store, they're going to do listening parties all throughout the country. Hopefully that you guys out there, there's one near you. that you won't have to drive very far to. For some people, it would be a ways away, but hopefully that gets into your hands at some point rather soon. And hopefully you have a movie theater around you that's going to show Dark Matter in the Dark. And thankfully for me, I'm going to have both of these experiences, which will be really nice because, A, it'll allow me to go into the Syracuse area and find Pearl Jam fans over here, which I don't think I know a whole lot of. Got a friend named Brett who listens to the show that I'm going to go see the movie with, and he has a couple of friends as well. So excited for that. But I'm excited to meet new Pearl Jam fans in this area and hopefully maybe some future tour buddies. Who knows? But it's a fun time. I like how they set these things up where they're like meetups in public and you can really kind of get the sense of how everybody is feeling about the new record, not just the diehards as we are.
Yeah. Shout out to Tasker, who was on a few weeks ago. I finally got to go and meet him. We hung out a little bit, talked about Pearl Jam a little bit, but yeah, I'm definitely ready to just digest this record and hear it in full. And I want to hear it as a whole, sit down, digest the whole thing, figure out, you know, again, what songs are going to translate live the best so we can get to talking about that and get to this tour.
That'll be the number one talking point when we come back. And because we have a couple of plans for episodes once that week comes, once next week comes, that Wednesday, we're going to come right back from the movie and we're going to give our report of the movie. So you'll have that the day after. And then we're going to do the regular episode of the week, which we'll get into a little bit later. And then, like we did for the two singles, we're doing, of course, another reaction party over Zoom, which you're all invited to, that you all should go to because it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we put together the other two and we kind of had this idea and a lot of people showed up and a lot of people participated in it. So we're just looking to do it again. I think it'll be a lot of fun to do, especially if a lot of us had already intook both of the experiences from the record store and the movie. So that should be fun. There'll be more details on that on social media as the time comes for sure. But that's about it. That's about it that I can really muster up right now. Like, you know, John and I were saying a couple seconds ago, just some of those songs, we just don't remember all of the names of them. And it's hard to kind of have a concrete idea of, okay, well, Stone said this song had a little bit of this, but David Frick said this song had a little bit of this. And then I'm going to give a shout out to our good friend, Chris Warren, who wrote something. And you can find that on the Pearl Jam podcast community page. He posted it a couple of days ago. And getting his take on it, too. It's everybody threw something out there. And now you just kind of have to sit back and be like, okay, the only opinion that matters right now is mine, but I'm excited to get to that opinion.
There's been so much stuff that we've been able to read and everything. And yeah, I'm ready to sit down with it and figure out, you know, compare it to Gigaton, compare it to some other things that we've heard it compared to. And we started this back in February and now we're this close. We're almost to the finish line. I'm ready to get there.
Before we do, we got some 1994 stuff to talk about here. This is a Patreon request from Robert Reeb, and we'll get to his story in just a little bit. But we have done three 1994 shows already. Next week will be the last of this little series. And what we really haven't talked about all that much is just the stretch and kind of the ups and downs and ebbs and flows of what this tour was. Because it starts out, they did the Rock for Choice show, and they did a couple of great shows in Chicago that were very memorable, especially a fan club show at New Regal Theater. And then some of the shows like in between, you get like little gems, songs are starting to debut from Vitalogy, but also in certain places, you kind of have a little bit of controversy of fans trying to break in backstage, a bomb threat. You have Miami, which is just a mess in and of itself, where everybody's just trying to bust down the gate to get in. And it feels like every other show almost where there's like a positive vibe from the stage and then not necessarily a negative vibe, but there are a couple shows in there where the band is dead tired. For most bands, this isn't a long tour at all. It's 25 shows, which just over a month, which doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, when you do get on the road sometimes, it just wanes on you. And for sure, with all these things going on, with them being at their most popular at this point, it definitely takes a toll. And then you obviously have the Atlanta stuff. We know somebody here is going to talk about Atlanta a little bit, because we had the 30th anniversary last week, and we didn't really have anything overly spectacular about that, because we covered that, episode 10. So tough to go back to that, even though it probably deserves a little bit of refreshing at this point. But it seemed like after that Miami situation, St. Petersburg, the two Atlanta shows, the Springfield show and this Rochester show, are really good vibes, and it feels like the band is in a good place.
Yeah, I mean, this run of shows, I mean, we talk about it all the time, that the floor on these shows is very high. Some of them are some of the best shows they've ever played, you know, Atlanta notwithstanding. But this is part of that really eventful 2 weeks, maybe the most eventful 2 weeks in their history. And yeah, such a weird in-between time with, you know, the Kurt stuff is about to drop. The Saturday Night Live is just about a week away of recording Vitalogy. And just so much stuff going on. You wonder how they were even able to focus on these shows, but they're all really, really excellent.
And of course, when they're going through this, as we'll kind of know, and we'll tell the story next week with that Paramount Theater show, is that this is the end for Dave Abruzzese. And we'll go through some quotes that he has recently shared about that. And he kind of saw writing on the wall, and he was really nervous about it. But whether the band saw the writing on the wall yet, or whether it was an idea in Ed's mind, somebody knows that these are the last couple shows before they decide to go in another direction, which I think for a lot of us huge Dave A fans out there, that's what draws you to the band initially, is just his bombastic power and his personality back there. Fun to watch, really fun drummer to watch. And a lot of people have even said, like, it hasn't been the same since Dave A left. Well, they're right. It hasn't been the same, but it's been good. It's still been great. So everybody has a purpose. All the drummers have a purpose in this band. And Dave A, at this point, definitely served his purpose. And he was at every show very, very noticeable. And we'll talk about him a lot today as well. As you mentioned, the next show is in Fairfax after this, and that is when everybody finds out about Kurt Cobain, and then that kind of changes the theme and changes the overall mentality of what's going into these shows. They go up to Boston for two at the Boston Garden, then obviously that Orpheum Theater show, and it's hanging over them. It's hanging over them, you know, immortality, whether or not it is a reaction to what's going on or not. That has always kind of been a little bit of a blurred line, where it's like, it's not really, it's kind of about the idea, but it gets debuted in Boston and they play it twice. So there is something connected to it for sure. And that's just really kind of how this crazy tour sort of balanced out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, just super eventful. And the show, like you said, the attitude of the show totally changed. I remember when we did that Fairfax show, there were like so many speeches and so much like emotion being poured into that by Ed and by everyone. So we know that like he went and, you know, destroyed the hotel room and all that stuff. There's a whole story around it. That episode was amazing. But yeah, this one, it feels like it's kind of an in-between, like some stuff is bubbling up to the surface, but it's more just building that tension. There's not the catharsis, there's not the big emotional moment, but it feels like it's kind of just almost there.
Well, as mentioned before, this is a Patreon requested episode from our patron Robert Reeb, and that means he has a story for us to tell right here. And of course, we love all the stories that come from within the last couple of years. They're always fresh on people's minds, but whenever we get a story from a 1990 show, no matter what it is at this point, because it's either 25 or 30 or more years ago, that we're getting something good and we're getting something that we might not have had a lot of information before this. Because you got to think, the Five Horizons details for this show, there's not much out there. They wrote like a sentence or two and that was pretty much it. So let's read up a little bit of what Rob had to say about this. Almost 30 years ago, I remember some things so clearly, other details not so much. I heard tickets were for sale in January. Someone walked by my dorm room at Lemoyne College and said so. I was a sophomore, 19-year-old, regular college student enjoying my way through. Tickets were on sale at a store at one of the local malls, Kaufman Department Store. I was done with class for the day and went down to the ATM and withdrew some money, and off I went by myself. I had never been to the store, so I needed to find my way to the quote-unquote special counter where they were selling tickets, hoping I can buy some. There were two or three people in line when I arrived. That's pretty good. That means you have a pretty good chance of getting in. Tickets were sold two at a time, $21 per ticket, $18 plus that $3 fee that they were ranting and raving about in Congress, and they were all GA tickets. I'm sure I still have my stub, I just don't know where. I was online four times. I walked away with seven tickets, and there was no one on the line when I was done. Now I just needed to make sure I had six friends who would go. There comes the test. Hopefully, in 1994, you can find it pretty easily. Rochester is about 90 minutes from Syracuse. Hey, I know that. We left after class, hoping for a great night. A couple of friends with me were from Rochester, and I'd never been to the arena, so I relied on those friends to direct, because obviously there were no Google Maps or anything at the time. Parked down the block from the arena next to a 15-foot snow pile. That happens around this time of year. Trust me, it does. Some guys left personal belongings in the car, and more on that later. Entering arena was uneventful. We decided we would go down to the floor. Small arena, definitely less than 15,000 people. And I was excited for the show after hearing that Fox Theater show on the radio a few days prior. They opened up with Wash, and from the bootleg, you can hear the crowd roar, and we were caught up in a sea of people moving toward the stage. Most intense moment of the night, moving back and forth with a few hundred people. Wash, into Animal, into Go, to Dissident, to Open was intense. Jeremy, Living as Your Best Revenge, we'll talk about that a little bit. Daughter with Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, Breath, and State of Love and Trust, single soundtrack, songs going back to back. Porch was so good, and they closed with Indifference. I wish I had video of this show. Middle of the floor was just crazy, and we wound up moving back a bit after the first few songs. After the show, we walked back to my car. The inside light was on, and driver door open. Not good. I had parked next to the snow, and I had opened the driver's door but couldn't get out, so I had slid across the passenger side but never closed the door. Thankfully, all belongings, friends' wallets and keys, and removable slide-out stereo from my car, that was an 84 Pontiac Grand Prix with a two-door coupe front bench seat, all were there, but my heart sank that stuff was gone. Also got a speeding ticket that night on the trip back, and that was terrible. It was an interesting time to be a fan. Seattle rock was all the rage. The band was on the cover of Time, Rolling Stone, two super successful albums. Sadly, Cobain would be found dead the next day after the show, and everything changed. It was my first show of a total of five so far, going back to Madison Square Garden in 98, and then Nassau Coliseum 2003, and then the second Garden date in 2003. And then The Garden again in 2022. As a reader of Five Horizons 20 years ago, I felt like their recaps of the 2000 and 2003 tours allowed me to be there. I took a long break as career, relationships, and family took over, but with the 2002 tour, I got back into it. And your podcasts have been great. Some of the official bootlegs I bought 20 plus years ago, and you and John have reinforced my opinion of why I bought them. The podcast has also allowed me to hear the voice of an old friend, Patrick Bogle, and hey, there's a new hallucinogenic recipe out. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. We went to college together. We had worked together in the summer of 1994, and he was my connection for news and bootlegs for a while. We lost touch as our lives moved on from college, but he is the man. Pat always had great info. We shared music from back then, tapes, import CDs. Never thought 30 years later that I'd be writing about this show, about this band. Thank you for the opportunity to share. Thank you for writing in and sharing all of that. That's great. And hopefully, as is all episodes for everybody, not just people that request an episode, hopefully we bring back some of these memories for you, because that's obviously a huge point of why we do this podcast. So why don't we bring those memories back, starting right now. Let's dig into this set list. The opener of this show is a very rare occurrence for the time, because this is only the second of two times that it was played in 1994. Only did it once in 1993, and then it would be played at Bridge School, and then not again until 1996. Wash is the very rare opener for this show. Loved the way they opened up this show. This is Dave A right away coming in, and deliberately some of those hits in there he is pounding away on, and it's not that it's bombastic. It does get that way until the end, but it feels like he's really concentrating and putting a lot of emphasis on like the big ones kind of building up until that chorus, and you hear it all the way through, and Ed really gets pretty intense. He starts to scream, and just the version when that happens starts to get like really fierce and blistering. And as Robert kind of alluded to, the crowd was ready to go on this. This was a very, very good version of Wash. We haven't talked about Wash in a long time, so very, very glad to hear it, especially from this era where we obviously don't get much of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, you hear, you know, Stone start, and there's a huge reaction right before Ed comes out to sing. I think probably when he waited to walk out, you know, right until right before the vocals started. But, you know, evidently there was, you know, stage was dark. There's a lot of candles around, amps and everything. So kind of setting the mood a little bit. But I agree, this version is fantastic. There's a great surge in the middle when the band, you hear them kind of push. You get that feeling on stage where, like, you look at each other like, all right, this is going to be one of those good nights. And everyone kind of, like, pushes it, you know, especially Dave A and Jeff are just locked in totally. And then, yeah, the ending is fantastic.
About the first half of this main set is that there's some order in here. It's structured in a way where things are kind of put together in these sections. So you start off with Wash, you got three verses following that, you got 3:10 following that, two more verses, and then it's going to end with two more non-record songs. So you start with Wash, non-album song, B-side, and then you're going to end with the back-to-back of singles. I like how that's all constructed right there, because it is giving a lot of emphasis to the verses stuff, of course, but also you're not waiting to go back and forth. And sometimes, especially when you only have two records on the table, sometimes you kind of need to package things together, because that's kind of the sound that you equate those songs to. You equate Even Flow with Why Go and Jeremy, so why not put them together? They'll do that now, probably for a very, very similar reason. But I liked how all this is constructed. It doesn't feel like there's too much verses, but also it doesn't feel like there's too much 10 either.
Yeah, I feel like they, you know, Ed found a groove that he liked on the set list. Because if you think about it, they're doing this all the time. Like, you get a run of Versus songs and then a run of 10 songs. And I think it would sound weird to go back and forth, like you said, with only the two records out. It feels like they're so different thematically and with the sound. Like, it would just be awkward to keep going back and forth. So have a run of Versus songs, get that attitude and that emotion going, and then switch to the 10 songs, you know, get more of the crowd going. Everybody knows the older songs, the MTV songs, get the crowd going on those, and then break into a bunch of new songs. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense the way he did it.
Yep. Love it. I think that's perfect. And obviously, you're going to follow up Wash, and you really want to hit those two big songs from Versus right away. It's going to be Animal, then Go, then Dissonant. Animal rips on this. And I think all three of these songs have amazing qualities to them. It's taking all that energy from the end of Wash and turning it into what I think is probably one of the more vicious versions from 1994. And it really helps when you have that kind of version and you can hear the crowd in the bootleg take over just almost about every song in here, except for like Corduroy, which they don't know. But you hear this crowd really well on this bootleg. And for something like Animal, which is a call and response type song, Ed doesn't really need to do the, okay, you guys, he doesn't need to do that stuff, which he does now. Almost more naturally, he wouldn't do that back then, but he gets those responses from the crowd, and yeah, it's really, really good on Animal.
Yeah, Animal works perfectly as the second song in a set after kind of a slow burn song, you know, your Oceans and Releases and Washes and those kind of things. Just gets everybody going right away. But I thought Go to the ending of Go when Mike comes in is just fantastic.
Yeah, Go also, you hear before Go, you hear the place just come unglued. And the taper must have been in a really good spot for that, because it feels like it's tough to capture all that. So this is a very interesting quality bootleg, because the first couple songs sound really good and then it kind of tapers off in quality just a little bit. And there's one song toward the end of the night where half of it is like almost unlistenable. And it's strange, but like, at least for the first couple, we do get really, really good quality sounding here. But Go, huge standout. Mike, huge standout on that. The ending solo almost seems a little strange, but finishes out with a great acceleration, all these flurries of hits coming from Dave A. And yeah, this is kind of what they did back in 1994. This is a no-brainer to put these two together. And every single night, they know that the crowd's going to react to this. It's the first two songs off the record, so why go in other directions for the beginning of the set when you know that this is going to work?
Right. Yeah. I mean, especially when you're in a place, I don't think they'd ever played Rochester before. When you're in a place that's new to you, you want to come out with a bang and get people going right away and see what the crowd's got.
I believe if they didn't play there with the Chili Peppers, yes, they did. They played there on tour with the Chili Peppers different place, Rochester Auditorium Center, in October 1991, but they've not been back there since.
Yeah, 2.5 years is long enough, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they know that they're going to get the crowd on their side right away. And then Dissident follows that up. And I thought Dissident sounds really inspired. And you always kind of go to the end here. That's what I always do. I'm just sort of waiting to see how Ed's going to attack it. And instead of just straight up singing it like he does on the record or speak singing it, which is sort of the normal idea that he's attacked it most of the times that they've done it, he screams this part. He just screams it. It's not necessarily singing. It's not necessarily screaming in melody. He just screams it. And that works for me too. I love when he puts his voice out there full throttle and goes for it, but I'll take a big scream on it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a hybrid of like the talking, because like it feels like he started off and he was gonna just speak it, but then he got caught up in it and just went for it. A really unique version. I don't know that we've heard that in a long time, if ever.
Probably not. I don't remember it, but I'm sure if it's worked here, maybe it's worked afterwards. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Maybe for next week's show, we'll see. Ed says, "Good evening, Rochester. It's nice to be here, and it's nice to have you here. What do you do here? Do you eat? Do you sleep? Do you fuck?" Well, that gets a pretty nice reaction. "So you're just like everywhere else, right?" That takes you into our 10 section here. It's Even Flow into Why Go into Jeremy. Momentum is sounding pretty good right here. I liked the most from Even Flow. It's showing off a little bit of his personality. Like, he's extending and he's kind of like laughing at himself. You can see him doing in this version. Like, he's not playing it straight by the book, but like kind of like how he does on Once in this era a little bit, where he kind of puts on that psychotic persona, not in that exact manner, but he's putting a little extra flair on it. That's fun for the people in attendance.
Yeah. He was known to do that at the time. I mean, that's something that you're going to get at these, you know, 94 shows. It's kind of the time that like it comes and goes. The earlier stuff kind of leads up to this, and then this tour is full of that stuff.
Yeah, these three that we have here, that's pretty normal for like a 1992 set. So they're taking a little bit of what they used to do and kind of adding it in with what they do now, the Animal Go Dissident, which is seems to be pretty common for this section in 1993, 1994, and they're kind of bringing both worlds together, which is very interesting. But Why Go? I thought the crowd was really good on. Fun, frantic version. There's a really good buzz in that crowd, as I mentioned. You can really hear it on Why Go. But I think Jeremy is probably the highlight of these three. And of course, the moment where it's going to take that elevation in the bridge and just go on it is Ed's little shrieks right before the ooh-ohs. Like, they feel more baritone-y. They feel kind of like under the radar. Like, he sometimes just goes all out there and just kind of chips away at it, but like he's approaching it differently in this, and I think it still works for this. Of course, what he's gonna say next about Jeremy means probably this song isn't in the best shape at this point in their mindsets. We know that next year, no Jeremy would come, and that would be a pivot point for this song live. But I feel like it's a little bit in here too, where he just wants to do something a little bit different to the song every time to just not make it sound exactly like what that music video is.
Yeah, in this section, like, I was expecting Even Flow to be just a ripper, especially after that intro. But the solo felt a little more bluesy, a little more relaxed. But yeah, by the time you get to Why Go, a little more ferocious and a little more pushing behind it. I thought Ed, especially on Jeremy, was like the voice is in full display there. He sounded absolutely great. This is a great Ed show.
Yep, it sure is. Yeah, those shrieks in that bridge, that was what did it for me with Ed. He says, all right, so we spoke. Well, what the fuck did he say? He said, fuck you, and fuck you too, and fuck this whole fucking world, and fuck all of you. You know what? He fucked up. Living is your best revenge.
The living is your best revenge. I mean, that's one of the most memorable little one-liners from this whole tour. That's something I still think of. I mean, I think it's been quoted a lot, and it's probably the thing from the show that people remember the most. Like, that's the quote about Jeremy. Like, that sums up the whole song, the whole video, everything.
And this is interesting because we had this on the Memphis episode that Jeremy goes into Glorified G. And I don't know if that's something I've noticed out of all these shows, but I'm thinking that they probably did it a bunch of times here. But like the connection there, that's a pretty good connection to make at the time, especially when we talked about the Memphis one. There was something about there being a gun show in the area. This is the second time, again, he's speaking in between those two songs. Same type of topic here. But if we look at this, the two songs back to back, I'm only going to go through, I'll go through 1995, because there were two versions in 2013 and 15 where they did it, but there are 18 instances from 1993 through 1995 where they did these two songs back to back. So it was definitely on their mind.
Yeah.
One of those versions, actually, if we look at it, we look Memphis, and then there was a couple of shows in between Memphis. We got St. Pete, Fox Theater Night 1, Fox Theater Night 2, and then this one. So they skip over the Springfield, Massachusetts show, and then they skip over the Fairfax, Virginia show, and they do it again at the Boston Garden the first night of the set in Boston. So this was definitely on their minds. And of course, we don't need to repeat this every time because everybody kind of knows and assumes this, but anytime you're going to do Glorified G, it's packaged together with Daughter because the stand-up bass and the whole thing. If you know you're going to do Daughter, then Glorified G is going to follow up on that. Now, this version does feel really punchy and a little bit more on the gas, and I feel like starting with this, maybe the songs kind of speed up a little bit. They almost feel in a way like how they did it a lot with Matt Cameron era songs, where they're just tackling it at a faster pace. I kind of felt a little bit of that.
And they've been on the road for a few weeks, so that you get tighter and things get a little faster. But this Glorified G, I thought, was pretty good. And this is not a song that I usually think of when I listen to shows. It's like, oh, that's going to be a highlight. But I thought it was great. And he throws in, like, the I Love Frogs, a little Frogs reference, which would, you know, we know they were a big part of the era, 95 especially. But, yeah, I thought...
It's too bad they didn't get on that MTV special, you know?
I know, exactly.
Oh, that's too bad. But, yeah. Well, they had the shot. But another thing I thought about with Glorified G real quick is just the differences between the Here We Go and the I Can Steal Your Heart From Your Neck. And I kind of equate it to, I don't know if this is what he's trying to get at, but especially when you think about it in our current situation now, the Here We Go is kind of a sarcastic take, like, okay, another gun incident. Well, here we go again. We haven't learned from the last time. I don't know if that's the idea in his head that he's come up with to change it up like this, but it certainly feels like it could be that way.
Definitely. Daughter, especially as coming off that, I thought Daughter was a highlight too. You know, the tags we can talk about is like, does that follow the same theme or not? But this is a good stretch.
Yeah, I like that crowd getting all the space to clap right in the beginning of where the tag starts, and the band gets really quiet at the point. And then all of a sudden they start doing the, we don't need no education. And once
Atlanta, and they were ready for it.
Right. Once any crowd hears this in any era, like, this is just one of those songs where at most shows, I said this a couple of weeks ago, the same way with Bob O'Reilly, at most shows, the crowd is going to sing this more than they're going to sing Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
It's just the case. But it's kind of a three-headed tag here, because we get another brick in the wall. We get Across the Universe, a little bit of that line, nothing's going to change my world. And then we talked about this in Memphis, but here we get that same Better to Not Be Sane tag improv. And I really liked what Stone was doing on that. There was like a little minor key strumming on it that sounded really, really good. But this was a recurring theme going back to this little tag here.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, recording of Vitalogy is going on. I wonder if this was maybe something that they were working up in the studio as like kind of a pry to Idavenita interstitial kind of thing. Yeah, it would have worked really well.
Yeah, think about doing this Better to Not Be Sane before going into Better Man. Hmm. Like, that would have been something, especially for people that are just like, all right, well, get me to the next song that's going to get me to Better Man. And they hear that, they're like, oh, okay. I don't know what they're trying to do here, but okay. They pretty much got that with the Idavenita, I suppose. But yeah, that would have been very interesting if they decided to do that for sure.
It's better to not be safe.
Let's get into the single songs. Got Breath and then State of Love and Trust. And yeah, it's just, you know, this random performance of Breath smack dab in the middle of the set in a year where they did not do it very often. And then once it comes to the Orpheum performance, that is the time period where it would go unplayed until that Garden show in 1998. They only played it 7 times in this whole entire year, which seems low, but it also seems like a little more for Breath being a rare song in a way.
Yeah, State of Love and Trust by comparison is 21 times, so 3 times as many.
It's fair. Okay, yeah. But yeah, I thought this was a nice little highlight from the show. And not only because it's rare to hear at the time, but I think that the verses that kind of balance out the choruses in Breath, they're kind of toned down a little bit, and they give room for those big choruses to really break out and explode. And you could feel like when it comes down to that bridge and the "if I knew where it was, I would take you there," like all of that becomes so massive because those verses were just taken down just a little bit, and that they were able to build through those moments so nicely.
Yeah, the second verse especially, it slowed down. It felt like there might have even been like a technical issue, like the guitars I think drop out for even a little while. But yeah, the Fairfax version of this I thought is one of the best of all time, where Mike just pouring all of that emotion and catharsis into the solo. And this one is very nearly just as good, I thought, especially when it kicks back in. The solo section is great.
State of Love and Trust, do you have anything on State of Love and Trust here? Pretty fired up, but as far as State of Love and Trust goes, that's pretty much the average median kind of version.
Yeah, nothing specific, just, again, building that energy back up after the mid-tempo section.
We're going to get a combo of Verses and 10 right here in Rats and then Once. And I think Rats especially has a little extra pop to it. Just, again, playing up to some of that overall energy of the crowd And I think that was something that Patrick and Brian on the last Hallucinogenic Recipe episode from 1993 talked about, how there are some versions of rats where Dave just puts that in and really brings attention to the song. And after Dave A, like, Jack Iron's not really known for doing too many rats versions, but also you don't think of him when doing rats. Like, the Dave A versions are ones to really cherish, where he brings this out of the band, and he just sounds really good on this. And then kind of the ending sounds really cool too, because they're gradually taking that tempo down. They don't just abruptly end the song, because it's one of those songs where on the record it fades out. So live, you have to find a way to kind of recreate that. So it kind of just gradually finds its way to stopping. And I thought that the way they did that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Rats is definitely a Dave A song. And yeah, this was a kind of a surprise when I was listening to this, because I, you know, was looking at Live Footsteps as I was listening. And yeah, after State of Love and Trust, it kicked in. I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot that this was this era. But yeah, I thought Rats was great. The ending, especially where, again, Ed going off on the Ben thing, and yeah, had a lot of energy to it.
Once following up, I think there's, as I mentioned with Evenflo, how he put a little personality into that. He's putting a little personality into Once, as I kind of mentioned there. You know, I admit it, what's to say? Well, you tell me. Just tapping into that little psychotic character that he had going on at the time. And then at the end, he says something, and I think this is what I got out of this. I've got nothing to say, but I hate losing my voice so fucking much. That's what it sounded like there. And it did feel like a little bit from this point forward that he did have moments. I think Corduroy, it's a little bit noticeable where his voice was breaking a little bit, but that's just, all these dates are so close together. Like, they would do the Springfield shows right before this. Then the next night they're going right down to Fairfax. And then one day in between and doing three Boston shows right in a row. Not stuff that we see nowadays, because there's usually like 2 weeks in between shows, but you know, that's another story for another time. But it feels like there can be a lot of wear and tear in spots, and maybe that's kind of what he's referring to.
See, I heard it completely differently. I listened to it a couple of times. I think he says, I love my girlfriend so fucking much.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I heard.
I thought I heard the word hate. But judges? But it is hard not. Every bootleg from this era, you're going to hear every word. When we get into Black, there's something that you noticed in Black that I had no clue was in Black because nobody else ever heard it or saw it. Now, since we're right there, we might as well talk about it. So there are improv lyrics towards the end of the song, but what did you hear specifically?
Yeah, so at the time, and he did this in Atlanta too, so he was going into an improv, you know, I don't think these people understand, like bringing that into it. And at the very end, he says, you know, starts singing Everybody Hurts, repeats it a couple of times. And that was a huge song at this time, you know, Automatic for the People was still like the current REM record. I don't think Monster was out yet. It maybe came out later in 94. But yeah, he tags Everybody Hurts by REM on this as well a little bit.
Monster came out in September, so that was the last thing that they had heard was Automatic for the People.
Right.
And what a
huge song.
Huge song, huge record. And to kind of tie it all in, we kind of know that Kirk was really planning to work with Michael Stipe on the next Nirvana record, which they wanted to kind of make it more subtle and to be more reflective of what Automatic for the People was. So a little bit of that thrown in there as well. We're ending the set with Alive, and this is pretty fun version. We get that, you know, I'm ready to fuck you line, which always gets the reaction from the crowd. And it's really kind of the pounding presence that you heard in other songs that's here as well. It's chanting something in this. Again, like, I might be 0 for 3. You might know what he's chanting, but there's something near the end where it's really tough to decipher what he's trying to say. Did you catch it? Or
no, to me, it just sounded like just screaming. I mean, it sounded like there might have been discernible words there, but it was really hard to make out.
Yeah. Now, it's not something that we ever get to see on Alive, and that's kind of what made me want to bring it up. But also, the ending was a little strange because it sounded like they're about to beat it into the ground and like really come off as like a big show-stopping end, but it feels like maybe a guitar drops out and kind of fizzles from what it was. It didn't have a really strong ending like I kind of expected it to.
It was kind of coming down from being the showstopper, right? Porch was the showstopper at the time, and Alive was kind of getting into that time where they were kind of falling out with it and weren't really feeling it. The solo, I think, is still great. But yeah, if you're expecting like a post-2000s version, these 94 and 95 versions are not going to be that.
Well, as a matter of fact, that takes us to the encore break right now. So let's pause for station identification and talk about a couple things going on in this little community. I want to give a big shout out and thank you to Jason Weiss for being a good trooper. When Jason found out that we were doing the bootlegs for everybody joining up on the Gig Leg and Horizon Leg tier, he really wanted to get in on that and wanted to put in for their Gig Leg tier. However, Patreon is not the greatest at functionalities. There are some issues with it. And in order to get on that $5 tier, he had to leave the $1 tier, and it was a mess. I obviously, you guys probably don't care about that, but I commend him for going through the motions on it, and he felt really bad, but he did a wonderful thing joining up on the Giga Leg tier, and that's great. And I thank him so much, and hopefully you get to see Jason out on tour. And again, that $5 tier, guys, as well as the $10 tier, if you want to take it up a little bit of a notch, that has those bootlegs. Every week, we will put up a bootleg download for the following show that we'll be covering. And for those of you who are already on those tiers that are downloading those shows, that comment section on Patreon, utilize it, because we could be sharing some of your stories. That would be a lot of fun to do. So it's all for getting more involvement in the community aspect and getting you guys acclimated to what we're about to do and kind of understand some of what we're talking about here. So that is available for you on Patreon, and keep this in mind because we are a couple weeks away from our big 2024 tour starting up. We will be doing instant reaction episodes for every show that they cover. And it's West Coast, which will be on the East Coast and stay up West Coast time to take care of all that. And then when it comes to Europe, we'll find ways to do it in Europe. But what the plan is and what the plan last year was is that we're going to have people out on site that just saw the show, are going to react to all that and share their takes and feelings and what songs they loved and what they thought worked from the new record. We're excited to get all of that. That's really where Patreon's going to take off. It took off last year and the year before with these. So if you're really interested in that, then hop on aboard. Again, it's only $1 a month to get every piece of episode content. So if that's something you're interested in, then hurry on over, get in on that before the shows start, and listen to some of last year's so at least you know what you're going to get. But man, this is going to be a lot of fun. And the plan, a lot of you who are going to be at some of the shows, I contacted and asked you guys for a little bit of help because we do need a street team. We need some people to sort of pass the word along, pass out some flyers and maybe some stickers. And the idea is to just make it apparent that we are doing something out on site for people coming out of the show. Because last year, we were just kind of standing around. Somebody had the phone, and if somebody wasn't on the phone talking back to John, then they were, you know, just kind of bullshitting around, and it didn't feel like we were doing an after show per se. But in this instance, it's going to feel like a bigger thing. We're going to test some things out. We're going to see what works. We're going to see what doesn't. And that is the beauty of having the street team and people that want to volunteer to help out. If you're one of those people, please reach out, get in touch, liveonfourlegspodcast@gmail.com, or get in touch on any of the social media pages that you follow us on. My personal account, you can send me a DM. It's okay. Wherever it is, please feel free to reach out. And yeah, we would love all the help as humanly possible, because that means that we're able to get the best product out there.
Yeah, you know, those firsthand reviews and the immediacy of it makes it very relevant. And that's why I think a lot of people kind of jump towards those. And it's invaluable for me too, you know, doing the Concertpedia reviews, trying to get those out the next day, talking to people and getting different points of view and talking to people about what songs they liked and playing different things off of different people. So yeah, those are going to be a lot of fun this year.
Yep. So even if you don't have time to do the street team thing, always check in to see where we're going to be on show day, because we'll pick out a location. People will kind of gather around there. Hopefully we'll have the big Live on Four Legs flag and somebody will be holding it out while everything is going on, and it just become apparent. So everybody's welcome to stop by, get their take on the show, and just, you know, help out. So we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to hearing from all sorts of people. So less than a month until we get to do that. Now for more content over on Patreon, we did put out hallucinogenic recipe episode this past week. It is about 5 months in the making because Brian and Patrick recorded something back when I was moving. And of course, while I was moving, it was just too much for me to get to. So I didn't edit it until last week. So the 1993 Bootlegs episode, which will reference a little bit of what was going on at that time 5 months ago. That is out, but they still talk about pretty incredible things and some great bootlegs and great shows and the distribution of everything and all that. And we're going to push them to do some more episodes pretty soon. So hopefully this is not the last year from them in the next little while. And if you're thinking about joining up, then please head on over to patreon.com/liveonfourlegs or download the Patreon app and search for Live on Four Legs, or you can just go to liveonfourlegs.com and click the Become a Patron button. That's all you have to do to join us. You guys, t-shirts, they're coming very, 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 very soon. Maybe even by the time you listen to this, you might have even seen one. So the minute that I get the samples, gonna put the website up and we're gonna put them up for sale. The hope is that in about 2 weeks, we can get them in my hands, and immediately when I get them in my hands, I'll be able to take orders and I'll be able to fulfill them and get them out as soon as humanly possible, so you guys will have them while you go and travel on the West Coast tour. So that's the hope. Check social media pages if you want to look and see what the shirt is and what the graphic is on the shirt. I think you guys are really going to like it. It's really creative. A friend, Alexa Templeton, put it all together as well as she did the last year's one that a lot of people liked as well. So we thank her, and she did an incredible job with this one. Really, really good stuff, and some Easter eggs in there for those that want to look for something that might not be on their radar. It's a cool design, so definitely get in on that if you're interested in helping us out and buying a shirt. Well, there could be a lot more to say right now with album, with tour, with Patreon, with everything, but I think it's time to get back into the rock. So they come back from break, and somebody says into the microphone, he said, "All right, you bastards." And I think it might have been Mike. I think it might have been Stone, but it wasn't Ed. And that's all they say. But Ed, for certain, says thanks from the bottom of our hearts. This kind of felt like detention, where you've been an outcast your whole life. And I bet you can imagine that. This is a good driving song, good runaway song. I think some of that was kind of indiscernible when listening to it, so I don't think we got the full sense of what he was trying to say, but nothing earth-shattering there, I suppose. But we're going to start the encore with Rearview Mirror, and then we're going to go into the second ever version of Corduroy. But first, Rearview Mirror. Going to the bridge, I thought, because at the time, the versions you remember from this period really don't extend too much on the bridge. It's usually for like a measure or two, and then they roll back in the bass intro, but they linger on this a little bit. And I'm wondering if this version is like the first point of experimentation into what the bridge would eventually become, and that we know now as being completely extended.
Yeah, there felt like there was still a lot of space there, especially Jeff, I think, was playing around a lot and just trying different things, but leaving a lot of space there for someone to do, and that can build tension in its own way. But it wasn't like a really driving version. It felt like they're just kind of like, let's just let this sit on it for a minute and groove on it for a minute and see where it goes.
Yeah, that's sort of the evolutionary plot points for this song. While they're amazing versions that do happen in 1994, I know the St. Pete version is very, very good, and some of the times where they either opened up or played it as the second song in, which I believe they did in Atlanta, those versions sound awesome. And obviously you can't say 1994 without that version. That's right, the SNL version, which really is that moment that completely changes the song, and then from there you kind of elevate it and get all those big moments. But yeah, it's some of these at this time too that they were trying to still see what it was and trying to figure it out on the fly. They're obviously playing this just about every night, and they're getting a sense of what they have with this song. And then sometime after SNL, and maybe a little bit down the line when it comes to like 2000, 2003 version, they really know what kind of monster they have with this. And that's when this song becomes everybody's favorite. A song that is everybody's favorite is being played for the second ever time right here. That's right. So Corduroy was debuted in St. Louis, and they took a couple weeks. They decided whatever to work on it or just not go back to it again. And that's where they bring it back up in Rochester. So it's very strange to hear Corduroy being played with absolutely no reaction. We said before that the crowd is pretty apparent on all the Tenon Versus songs. They're singing along or they're reacting to it. But Corduroy, it's like they're just kind of waiting, almost like that beginning part where those notes are being plucked. In their minds, this could just be like an intro to something that they already know. Like, what are they building up to here? And then when the song finally gets those chords to ring out, they're like, oh, this is something completely new and something completely different. I get this.
Where there's still a lot of the early lyrics too, and this is the only Vitalogy song of the night, but if you can find the handwritten set list from the show online, from the, I guess, written on the hotel stationery that they stayed at, and it was supposed to be Not For You here, but they did a flip and changed it to Corduroy. I wonder if that's something they had been maybe working on in the studio. I know like that alternate version of Corduroy that's on the box set has some of the different lyrics, felt like that might have been closer to this version, like more of an embryonic version of it. But yeah, just interesting to see, you know, how it would evolve and how it would keep getting better, because I think after this they, it wasn't that much longer before they played it again, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, some of the things, like you mentioned those lyrics, the lyric at the time for kind of that last end of those choruses, no matter how far we both have ran, never would have known of me before. So it was used very seldomly during this era. And once after Vitalogy came, like the whole song changes in identity, of course. Yeah. But also, this is a very rare Dave A appearance on this. And it feels pretty raw. Like Dave sounds great on it. And I think what we know of Corduroy to be now is that the band plans for so many action moments, dramatic moments, like the part right in that bridge before getting into sort of the end of the song where can't be what I want because you always know that there's supposed to be a pause there, right? That moment is like they stop for a second, completely stop. But in this version, they play right through it, which is interesting because maybe you don't think about that when you're hearing this at shows nowadays because it's just so normal that they've done that. But little things like that, that just build up the drama within this song are really important to how this grew throughout the years.
They did it the next night in Fairfax and then a few nights later at the Garden. But yeah, only four versions with Dave A, and then like, yeah, in 95 it was off to the races. But yeah, I mean, that's something that you work out live or work out in rehearsals. Let's figure out where we can accent this and give it a little more dynamics, give it a little more build so that it gives it a little more impact. Yeah, I mean, they did it to perfection on this song.
Yeah, Dave A's version kind of, again, you can tell the rawness. He sounds great in it, but he's playing it without really any tempo changes at all. He's playing it pretty straight through the whole entire time, which obviously, you know, Corduroy has those peaks and valleys that just make the song so perfect in that way. And it feels pretty spanking new here, but also not too far off from what it would turn into. Just a little bit of changes that needed to be had before it would become the mega song that it is. Honestly, right. It still has that gravitational pull, though.
And, you know, some people could have went and bought it that night.
According to Ed, apparently.
Could have gotten the recording of it.
So he says, that's a song off our new album that's coming out tomorrow. Well, actually, I'm selling it out of my hotel room tonight. If you can get it if you want. I'll sell albums and Mike will be selling something else. And during this time, we hear very subtle, very brief little pluck of the release notes. Mm-hmm. Wonder if that was an idea kind of out of the grab bag that maybe Stone's like, maybe we can throw this in an encore. Like, is this another option instead of Small Town? But as we know, it had never been taken off that opener spot from about like 1992 until 2008, I believe, is that time era. So there was no chance of that ever happening. But it does bring you into this version of Small Town that happens. And what's really interesting, you can hear somebody in the crowd, I guess maybe the taper, say, oh, Ed plays guitar on two songs now. And I'm thinking to myself, like, River Mirror, Corduroy, Small Town. Isn't that three? Right? You think?
I don't know if he was playing it on Small Town, maybe just River Mirror and Corduroy.
It's weird that they reacted during Small Town that they said that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... But also, it makes sense that if any song was supposed to be in for Corduroy, that it would be Not For You, because the same, it did the same thing, kind of like with Glorified G and Daughter, which had the stand-up bass for every single time. They had a lot of Ed songs all put together in set lists for that same reason, not having to switch out his guitar. So, Small Town, it seems like the crowd is kind of invested, but it's also kind of quiet. And it just is the break before getting into something a little bit bigger. It's not one that really, really stuck with the crowd just yet because it is still an outlier at this time.
Yeah, still an early version to only the 28th performance. And like, compare that to some of the other Versus songs. You know, River Mirror's at 63, Animal's already at 70, Goes at 67, Dissident even with 37. So it was one of the lesser played ones from that record at the time. But yeah, it felt like it switched about halfway through. Like, they were playing it pretty straight, and then about halfway through, it got a little softer and a little more tender and, like, a little sweeter, and they kind of, like, brought it down, like, a little bit about halfway through.
That's pretty much been the standard of what we heard from the last couple of versions of 1994 that we've done the last few weeks or so. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. After Small Town... The last two songs in Encore number one are going to be an improv that's going to directly get you into Porch. And this improv, it doesn't quite have a name from my perspective here, but I don't know why. I am feeling a lot of 70s Stones vibes from this improv. It's just a very like quick riff, a little bluesy, but the guitars are really crunchy. And then they kind of switch up and open it a little bit more. And I think the idea is that Ed is just riffing on those lyrics, but it's not, I don't want to say it's not put together, but I mean, you're going to put it up against the improv from this era, which is Out of My Mind. No, it's not anywhere close to what that is, but they were going for some ideas at the time and seeing what sticks. And it was fine, but I don't think it really stands up there with any of the other improvs that happened this year. Like, it just doesn't feel like it has that stature. We'll be right back.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like Pearl Jam. I mean, the riff to me sounded very familiar. I even listened to it a couple of times, but I couldn't place it. But it felt like something that I knew. I was trying to think, like, is it Tom Petty? Like you said, is it the Rolling Stones? Is it? But at the very beginning, I was like, oh, this is a cover. It's not, but it's definitely, like, based off of something. Maybe, you know, some of the more classic rock aficionados out there can place it. But it's just credited as just a jam. Like, there are some lyrics, and then gets into, like, a Leave Me Alone riff kind of over and over again. But, yeah, another one that just kind of fits that mental illness kind of break, like, separation anxiety from being in the world kind of theme of Vitalogy.
Yeah, and then at the end, kind of going into Ed's little last speech here, it does feel like the quality completely drops. And it'll do that, and while Ed is talking, you can not really tell specifically what he's saying, but the idea is kind of like, seems like it's about, like, becoming irresponsible adults, like going from irresponsible children to being irresponsible adults or something like that. And I didn't quite get that, but it does come back to good quality right when that solo and Porch starts up. We talked about the Porch from Memphis and how different that was, the completely different sound of the song. And then we get this version, which is completely different from the completely different sound of the song, while still being completely different from what a normal Porch solo is. It's kind of psychedelic, which I really like. It's got a little bit of that spiraling, chaotic sound that just keeps repeating and going. Then, after a while, it just becomes this full-out drum attack, and Dave has a serious fit going on in this, and he starts really going at it and has a big, big moment during this. That is so unique for this, because you got to think, like, most of the Porch stuff that you do here nowadays is pretty much stuck to what Porch is. It doesn't really differ a little bit. Like, sometimes the idea of the solo will differ, but not, like, the whole composition. But these that we've talked about the last few weeks feel like they've gone in completely different directions that Porch hasn't really seen.
Yeah, it was very weird. It takes a complete left turn after that verse, and yeah, they just go off onto something completely different for a couple of minutes. Just doesn't even sound like Porch. It seems like the crowd is into it. They do find a groove with it. But then, yeah, there's that moment where they decide, like, okay, we're going to kick back into Porch, and then they just flip the switch and get right back into it, and they're off and running.
Familiar sound comes back in, and it feels like it's coming full circle, but also when it does come back in initially, that doesn't last very long. It pulls you in so many different directions, and then once you finally are at that breaking point where it's like, okay, let's finish the song, let's give this big feel that it always has, and Ed shouts out, he's got the big hollers before breaking back into the chorus. It all makes for a really unique version of Porch that doesn't really get passed around a whole lot. And look, Porch in 1994, this is like 2 days following up on one of the greatest versions of Porch of all time. So, of course, it's not going to get that same treatment as the Hat Not Anywhere Close, but it's one that I think needs to be talked about a little bit, that people need to go back to and kind of digest a little bit more. It's very interesting. One more song left. We're going to walk off stage and walk back on. And there's a huge response when they come back out on stage. It seemed like some of the people from some of the chatter that we heard, that maybe people didn't think that they were going to come back on and then were really, really surprised once they did. I'm going to guess that no house lights came on or anything like that. But still, that dead area, you're kind of thinking to yourself, like, well, are they? Won't they?
You stay until the PA music comes on.
Yes, I know that. But also, do they know that? I don't know if they know that. But what we do know is that Indifference closes this night. It was interesting percussion-wise. Like, that slight tambourine hits really kind of sets the vibe for what this is. And really, without that, this becomes really, really sparse.
Yeah, and I think this was another one where the lights came down and the candles were really front and center and really setting the mood. But yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, just like Atlanta, you know, they come back out when Difference, half the people had left and have to run back in. Yeah, the percussion was interesting, but it's really about just creating that space and not doing too much with it, because with Indifference, it's like less is more.
Yeah, I feel that. They weren't going for the communal experience at the time. Yeah. They just kind of wanted to leave it as to what you know of it and what you hear of it, and kind of leave it a little bit sparse. So yeah, that's how we close out the show. A lot of energy from a lot of different songs, but we're going to close this on that smooth plane landing. All right, three moments from this night, since we are done with the set list. For my number three, I'm going to say Breath. For my number two, it's Animal. And for my number one, Wash My Love.
I think I'm in that vicinity. This is tough. My number three is Daughter. My number two is going to be torn between two songs here. My number two is going to be Wash. And my number one is going to be Rearview Mirror.
All right. That leaves this to go to the ratings here. Good show. 1994 is not going to get bad ratings at all around here. It's whether or not I think it's of the 9 realm or think it's of the 8.5 realm. I can go either way. Do I think it deserves to get more positive? Sure, I can buy that. I will give this a 9.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same vein. I don't think this is up there at the 9.5-10 range, but it's definitely better than an 8 and 8.5. So yeah, I'm right there with you, 9.
Yep. And that's what all comes from this era. Good shows. Yep. They just sort of all find themselves in the middle. Like, the average, if we did all the shows and rated all of them, the average rating would probably be around like a 9.
Yeah, or a 9.5. Yeah. There's a few more 10s that we haven't done, I think, from this run that we'll get to.
Well, we'll see if next week is one.
Yep.
Well, I don't know if we're going to be back on the streak again, but we haven't given 10s to many shows
right
this year. There might have been, one of us might have given something a 10. You probably gave one of your shows a 10. But
Yeah, Columbia.
Yeah, I've not given a show a 10 this year yet. But
right,
we'll see. There's a lot of time. We'll see. Next week, as we teed up, it is the final show that Dave Abbruzzese has ever played on, and that comes from New York City at the Paramount Theater. We'll get into talking about all that. There were some recent quotes from Dave talking about what happened after the show and kind of where he was mentally, and some interaction with Ed that made him feel like, this might be the end for me in Pearl Jam. So it's an important show on that aspect, and it's really kind of see how Dave goes out on his finale, because you have to think that maybe he saw a little bit of the tea leaves. Well, maybe he didn't think it was coming this soon. So, all right. Well, thank you all for listening in. And hopefully you guys have enjoyed what we've been doing on this podcast. We've been enjoying giving it to you week in, week out, week in, week out, week in, week out, 6 years almost now. And if you are just listening, maybe this is your first time, maybe you've kind of tuned in and out here and there when you've seen it on social media or whatever, but we would love if you'd be able to subscribe on any platform. It could be on YouTube, it can be on Spotify, it can be on Apple Podcasts, it doesn't matter what it's on. We would just love to know that you guys are getting notifications for this and seeing it pop up on your feed, and that, hey, maybe next week, the week after that, there'll be something else that you're really interested in, and hopefully we can capture your attention for every week. That would be the plan. But also on those platforms, if you want to help out, you can go to Spotify and Apple and help us out by giving us a 5-star rating, because, well, we deserve the 5 stars. We fully believe we do, but hopefully you guys are in that same wheelhouse as well and respect and enjoy what we do. Don't hear a lot of people that don't. And that's just, I guess, a testament to what we've been doing. And I really appreciate people that say that. It would help a lot of the visibility if you helped out and gave us a 5-star rating. But also, the comments are definitely where people are going to gravitate. Because if anybody goes to either page on any of those platforms for podcasts and they see people commenting and saying good things, then they're going to want to, especially right now, coming very close to tour time, people are going to have a lot of time on airplanes and cars and be like, well, I want to prep myself for these shows. Where can I find some good stuff that aren't the bootlegs I've listened to 100 times? Well, maybe we're an option for that. So it's up to you guys to comment and let them know what they're getting into by listening to this program. And hopefully they're getting into something good. Like maybe Rob today got some of his memories rehashed a little bit, and hopefully we're able to bring back some good ones for him, because that overall is the number one goal. All right, let's finish it off. This may be the end. We're here, but not for much longer. And although we may be parting ways, miss you already, miss you always. Hey, we got a couple of New York City shows that we're doing this year. We'll see one later in the year. We already did a Brooklyn one. And we'll be in New York City next week. We will also be at the movies next week. We will also maybe be at record stores next week. And then, when all's said and done, we might have a vinyl in our possession and may know the lyrics of every single song off Dark Matter. Whether or not I remember all the names of them right now, well, that's another story, but we will know very soon. Until then, see you on the pod.
Living is the best revenge.
Okay, so he spoke. What the fuck did he say? He said, fuck you, and fuck you, and fuck you too, and fuck this whole fucking world out the fuck out of here. Well, you know what? 20 minutes. What? He fucked up. Living is your best revenge.